And all this week, we're talking about climate change. Today, we want to look at possible solutions. First, what you can do. Brenda Eckwurzel is Director of Climate Science for the Union of Concerned Scientists and author of Cooler, Smarter, Practical Steps for Low Carbon Living. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
And let's start with the cars that we drive. How important are fuel-efficient cars or electric cars or giving up cars entirely if you want to lessen your carbon footprint?
Sure. If you drive, and if you drive what an average American drives, which is about 10,000 miles a year, it's the single most effective step is to switch a car to get better fuel economy. For example, if you were to upgrade your car that got an average fuel economy of 20 miles per gallon and instead had a more fuel-efficient car that's 40 miles per gallon, you could save over the life of that car about 4,500 gallons of fuel. Hmm. And if you were doing $3 a gallon, that's putting over $13,000 in your pocket. Luckily, in our country, we have established aggressive fuel economy standards, so all Americans are going to save money at the pump.
And if I have a car that gets about 30 miles a gallon, right in the middle of your two examples there, is that something where you would say, well, you really, if you can afford it, you should try to get a more fuel-efficient car, or is that pretty good
Absolutely.
For right now?
I mean, to be honest, if only a few cars on the road are getting 40 miles per gallon, one of our clean vehicles engineers told me once, he said, I would be much happier if a truck that is gets an extra little bit of, say, an extra 5 or 10 miles per gallon, and more people are driving trucks over long distances, that could go a really long way.
What about the food that we eat? How can we make sure that that is as climate conscious as possible?
Sure. It really comes down to thinking about where your food comes from. So what we find is that, for example, a pound of beef would be equivalent to 18 pounds of pasta regarding the climate, the harm to the climate. So when you're thinking in those terms, what we did was we crunched the numbers over consumer habits for all the things that Americans do, from eating, what you do in your home, going to the doctor and so forth. And what we found is those three things that you honed in on are how you get around, how you heat and cool your home, the energy use in your home, and food.
And when it comes to food, it's all about red meat, or are there other things as well?
Well, it's mostly important to know the source of your food. What really matters is how that beef was produced. If it's produced with a lot of grain and corn and a lot of fossil fuel tractors driving, a lot of water needs, it's different than a grass-fed cow, for example. So knowing the source of your beef on the farm, emissions are bigger with protein of that size compared to getting it to your table. Whereas vegetables, eating local vegetables makes a bigger difference. But vegetables in general are very low carbon footprints compared to beef.
So what about the other thing that you mentioned, which is the energy in your home? What should we be thinking about there?
All right. All you listeners out there that may have a refrigerator that is older than 1993, you really have to get a new one.
Hmm.
That's when there, and this is where standards at the federal level make a difference, and good engineering. There was a increase in efficiency of refrigerators from 1993 to afterwards. It was increasing about 70%. So for older refrigerators, that was the largest energy use in the kitchen.
We've also heard that you shouldn't leave things plugged in if you're not using them, like even a television, that these new TVs that take up a lot of energy.
Yeah, there's a fun jargon term for this one. We call it phantom power. So, for example, I really don't need my TV, my microwave, and everything all night long having those lights on. We just don't need them. So, for example, the television, what we do is you have one of those power strips, plug in your television, all the remote devices that you're feeding into it, and you just turn on that one rocker switch when you want to watch television and turn it off the rest of the time you're not doing power.
I feel like if you were to ask somebody, you know, are you doing what you can for the earth? They would say, oh, yeah, I recycle. So how important is recycling?
It's interesting. We looked at the recycling, and you'd be surprised what is the most important thing to recycle from a climate standpoint by slowing the pace of climate change. Would you like to guess what it is, or you want me to say which one it is?
Is it aluminum?
You got it.
Wow.
Exactly. Aluminum cans. All aluminum. It takes so much to extract that ore and get it to market. It's a lot of energy use. So we're going to be mining our landfills in the future for some of these precious metals. Really. It's going to be – that's closer to home, and it's better than extracting the raw ore.
That's Brenda Eckwurzel, who is Senior Climate Scientist and Director of Climate Science for the Union of Concerned Scientists. Her book is Cooler, Smarter, Practical Steps for Low Carbon Living. Brenda, thanks for joining us.
I enjoyed being here with you. Thank you so much.
So what about big picture solutions? For that, let's bring in Steve Cohen, Executive Director of Columbia University's Earth Institute. And Steve Cohen, do individual steps make a significant difference, or do we really need massive changes to fight climate change?
I think we need everything. I think we need individuals to take those steps. But then there are systems level changes that we need at the local level, the state level, national, and also international.
Like what? If you could wave a magic wand, what would be the first thing that you would do to deal with climate change at a macro level?
Well, let me start with the easiest thing to do, because the easiest thing is we can waste less energy. I don't think anybody's going to oppose energy efficiency, and Americans in particular waste enormous amounts of energy. When we transmit energy from wherever it's generated to wherever it's used, we lose upwards of 25%, sometimes as much as a third of the energy that's generated. So if we developed, and this would take a large-scale change, a smart grid technology where we use more of what we have and we build a more intelligent system, that's going to save energy. If there's a single thing that I think we really should be focusing on, it is to make solar energy, solar cells more efficient, possibly through the application of nanotechnology, and to continue to focus on battery improvements. Because the problem with solar power and wind power is it's intermittent. If we figure out a way to store it, suddenly solar energy, which is basically zero to generate, becomes cheaper and cheaper, and it will drive fossil fuels from the marketplace.
And what about the issue of the food that we eat? And in particular, I'm thinking of cows and all the methane that they produce.
Well, these are the tougher problems. And frankly, if you look at it on a global level, I don't think that's really the heart of the issue. We could certainly make our diets better, and I think many people are doing that anyway. The focus on wellness puts you in that direction. But I think that what we really have to do is move away from this idea that solving the climate change means you have to sit alone in the dark with a candle. We can maintain and even enhance our lifestyles by becoming more conscious of our impact on the environment and moving to technologies that allow us to do more with far less energy.
There are issues of transportation. Where you are in New York City, there's a major public transportation network. Not every place has that right now. Would it make a difference if they did?
Well, we in America have developed, unfortunately, a very dispersed lifestyle. So we're going to be reliant on personal transportation. So if that personal transportation is electric and the electricity is largely generated by renewable energy, it won't be that much of an issue. But what we also can do is have a system where you can ride a bike to a bus or to a train, and you can do ride sharing so that five people are in the car instead of one. I mean, there are so many things that we can do by just simply altering how we do some of our transport.
How important a solution is something like green buildings or even urban farms?
All of this is very important, but there's a limit to it. What's really important about it is that people are now paying attention to what they're eating. Some vertical farming could be very effective because you could actually close the system of production. There'd be no waste going into the aquifers. You could limit the amount of water. Those are technologies that are going to develop over time. I think what's really good about what's going on now is people are thinking, what am I breathing? What am I eating? What's the quality of my water? When I was growing up, nobody thought about any of that. And I think that's a dramatic change in how people are living today.
I remember speaking years ago to a scientist who was talking about the idea of launching basically sunglasses into space that would kind of block out the sun to a certain degree and buy us some time. It's a solution that would not happen. But are there kind of crazy magic bullet solutions out there to deal with climate change?
Yeah. I mean, the idea of carbon capture and storage is not that crazy. It's just expensive. But I think that the single approach that I think would make the most sense is putting some serious government money into the basic research on solar cells. You know, if someday the solar array isn't $15,000 and the whole roof of your house, if you have a suburban house, but is half of a window that you can put in an apartment, and that solar battery is not $5,000 and occupying a whole wall, but it's the size of your laptop, then suddenly you start to have distributed generation of energy being a real possibility. When I was in graduate school, the computers that we used were the size of a small semi and had less computing power than your iPhone.
Right.
So the idea here of shrinking and making more efficient the storage of solar energy is not crazy. And somewhere in a basement in Hong Kong or maybe in somewhere in California, some kids are figuring out how to do this.
Steve Cohen, Executive Director of the Earth Institute at Columbia University, thank you so much.
Thank you.